Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Ray.
I'm Alex Reed.
Welcome back to another episode of... Welcome back to another episode of Mostly Lit. How are you doing, Alex?
All right. Doing good.
Yeah.
Good. Welcome back to another week, guys. Again, thank you so much for tuning in and listening, sharing, and all sorts. But make sure that you're subscribing and telling your friends and telling your friends to tell a friend and telling your mum, you're telling your dad, telling your brothers, your sisters, your cousins, your aunties, your uncles.
Back home.
And everybody that has ears. So please do keep sharing.
Absolutely. We have an amazing guest today. I'm so excited to have her on because...
She has an amazing name.
Of course she does.
An amazing name. It's a name of like royalty.
The name of the great.
It's a regal strength that we have up in this room today.
Right?
Yes,
it's Olympian. Oh,
it's Olympian.
Oh,
because
we're gonna
tell you why we did all this today. Anyway, welcome Alexandra Shepherd.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. I'm such a super fan.
We have a celebrity in our midst. Oh my gosh, I'm not worthy. Oh, good. But how are you though?
I'm good. I'm so, so excited to be with you guys. I've listened to every episode for like the last 2 years. So super happy to be here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to our mess.
Yeah. I'm still surprised people listen. I sit in my room and just like, wow.
Why would you listen to this? Although sometimes I do feel like we have jokes, and I listened to like in the last episode and I was like laughing.
Oh yeah.
Like you're like, you know when you look back and you're like, wow, that was stupid.
Yeah. And it feels like I've been like, I listened mostly late on a Monday night when I'm cooking my dinner.
Yeah.
And I'm just talking to my phone interspersed with you guys. Yeah. And I agree with you and I don't agree with you. So it feels kind of surreal to be looking at your faces.
So now you're gonna be here and telling us when Ray's talking. Remember this,
yeah. Now you can actually just tell me that, Ray, shut up.
Because I know you agree with me.
Literally, Alex Squared. Today.
Yeah, Alex Squared.
Alex Squared today.
All right, so let's get into the show. We're going to get on to Alexandra's amazing book in the main part of the show.
But, Oh my God.
See, you keep doing this. You're in these puns. Whatever. Okay, so mostly news.
What's up? Tell us what's going on around the world.
Okay, so a bit of sad news. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Angela Levy passed away this week after battling cancer at the age of 62. Mm-hmm. For those of you who don't know who Andrea Levy is, walk into Waterstones or whatever bookstore and pick up and just go find her in the fiction section.
Yeah.
She writes amazing stories about the Windrush generation, about the Caribbean. How do you guys feel about her passing? It was a real shock, wasn't it?
It was a real shock. And I think for me, I read Small Island when I was very young. Mm-hmm. I think it came out 2004. And I think I read it maybe like around that time as well. Maybe like, I don't know, a year or two afterwards. And that was like the first sort of rhetoric that I read concerning the Black Caribbean experience.
Yeah, same for me as well.
Yeah, it was the first time. And it was such a new thing. And I always remember how when, is it Hortense? The main character.
Hortense.
Yes. When she went to like an interview or something and she walks into a cupboard and it was
in anger.
In anger, and she walks into a cupboard and at the end, you know, she goes outside and she meets Gilbert outside and they sit down and then he's like, you walked into a cupboard.
One of those defining moments.
And it was that moment where like they shared this bond and this laughter, like, oh God, like look at all these things that we have to go through just so we can survive. And it was such a beautiful moment that broke the ice between them. Mm. And I always remember that all the time.
That was my first kind of interaction with the book. It was the BBC adaptation. Mm. The adaptation. and that was an amazing. That's what made me pick up the book after, because I was like,
I haven't watched it yet, but I think I'm due a reread of Small Island. I read it when I was a teenager, and it was the first time I'd read anything about the Windrush experience or seen it written down. Like, I'd heard the stories from my grandparents and my uncles and aunties, but never read it in print or in literary fiction.
So
I mean, she has amazing other novels.
Yeah, like The Long Song. Yeah, again, the BBC adapted again. Yeah. My friend was in that, actually. Really? Yes, shout out to Tamara, who was the lead. But it was great. It was really great. And, you know, it's really sad when you lose somebody who's actually created quite a body of work.
Especially over, so young, 62 is no age at all.
Yeah, she started writing properly at 30.
I know. I read that, I was like, oh my God, like, she started quite late. Not late, but now we look at it and it's like we have writers like early in their 20s.
It's tomorrow.
I know, but I look at it, I'm like, oh my God, like, we think we haven't achieved so much when we're 20, but people are writing at 30 and, you know, writing their magnum opuses and such amazing stuff. So it's really sad. But I think her work will definitely live on, and so she and her and her family can definitely be very proud of that.
Definitely being, like, obviously given the current context of what's happening in the UK now and across the world, I'm imagining it will be a staple text for a lot of schools.
Absolutely,
I would hope
so.
Yeah, so rest in peace,
Andrea.
All right. The rest of the world is a mess.
God.
So Katy Perry announced, gave an apology for her blunder with her shoes that she
a blunder.
That
That's one way to put it.
I'll say a blunder. So she decided that she was going to make this shoe that looked very much like a gollywog or a sambo. So she had there were two shoes. There's one with like a beige background with big red lips and big eyes, and then there was one with a pitch black background with big red lips and black eyes, and that's kind of mirrored against what happened with Gucci and Gucci's kind of problem
that they
had, that jumper that they had. And, you know, Gucci issued an apology. And they issued an apology, and they're going to make a lot of different changes in diversity wise. But, you know, how long do we have to keep seeing these things pop up? And just for like, no one in the editorial room sitting there thinking, guys, this could be a bad idea. Room,
and they are saying, let's do this, because it is a bad idea. People will talk. Publicity will be there.
I'm not sure I agree.
Really?
Having been in the room, I've heard a few friends who say that, and having been in the room of companies who have made blunders, especially with regards to race, they are shitting themselves when it happens. It strikes fear in the heart of every PR and marketing manager and head of branding. I've been in companies talking about, you know, the H&M thing with the monkey jumper that happened a while ago.
Oh, they didn't catch that.
Like, well, I wasn't in H&M, but I was with another client I was working with, again, a big retailer, and they talk about it in hushed tones, like, can you imagine if this happened? This would be so awful. So I don't think it's been done deliberately. I do think, however, maybe the media storms around it is very much deliberate, because they know now it's going to get clicks.
But what are PR, like, as in, this isn't the first time this has happened. The reason why I say that it's very sinister, because it's not the first time it's happened. These events have, like, and it's the same picture, the same rhetoric. So I'm thinking, what are you doing in your job that you don't understand what is happening in the media, so that you are very much aware that your product isn't going to incite any sort of uproar outside? As in, how socially insensitive or inept do you have to be?
I think that's the word. It's socially inept. I think you are surrounded by people in your white bubble, and nothing really penetrates that. So you don't think anything about, you don't think gollywog when you see a pair of black shoes with red lips on them.
Yeah.
And that's really awful. The fact that, you know, there aren't enough people in the room, or enough people empowered in the room, to say something. Maybe there are other people there saying something or thinking something, they're just not speaking up or being listened to.
I always think of the worst case scenario, and I'm always like, these heifers.
They really did it. I think it's just as simple as they just don't have people in the room who had those lived experiences, and to sit down and say, guys, this is a bad idea, let's not do this. It'll cause a storm. And so Gucci's kind
Katy
of made
Perry though.
Yeah, Katy Perry.
Like, she been around black men.
What did you expect? Like, sometimes I think to myself, like, all right, there's a lot of these people with their brands, and are they in the room? Not necessarily. Do they just sign off? like these little things.
Yeah. Well, it's a lesson learned for her.
So they put it out now, and then obviously she sees her name's attached to it. They see all these things, and then she takes it down and does all these little like iOS press releases, and it's very long. I just can't be asked
Somebody
with it.
Was like, so are we now cancelling Gucci? Now in my head, I'm like, I ain't cancelling Gucci.
No, I won't. You know what I mean? If you can't cancel everything, man. But like, you won't be. We wouldn't exist anyway. But yeah, so that's what's going on there. Letitia Wright won EE Rising Star.
Yeah.
The BAFTA EE Rising Star. And like, she's amazing. She had an amazing long speech about how she almost gave up. And it was just the strength of her faith and the people around her that kind of brought her into doing the job that she decided to do. And I think so many people, like so many professionals, so many creatives, like resonated with that. Because it's like, if you continuing to push, even when it's the hardest thing and you don't see any rewards or results from it.
Yeah.
And to for her, I was just like, but then again, like I looked at the group of nominees in there and I was like, I only know two of these people. I think it was Lakeith. What's his name?
Lakeith
Stanfield was in there, and then there were two other people. But I don't know who they were.
She, so she was like I'm shaking. You could tell that she really appreciated the award. Aww. She was like literally shaking, and then she did like little videos that she posted up to show how thankful she is. I think she's such a lovely spirit. Like they call, what was it? People are calling her like the UK Disney princess that we need.
Disney princess.
Why
are people so quick to just attach these labels to people, man? Just
all
leave
right,
her.
Mr. Non-label.
Just leave her.
She's such an amazing spirit. She actually lives Letitia in Wright. A block, like in a nice place where one of my friends lives.
Oh, okay.
And I have many a time asked her if I can go around and just walk around the area.
You're a real stalker for real.
Maybe just like seeing her, like, and then I could just be like, hi, so
you bump into her, make it like an accident.
No, oh, it's whoops. Like, oh my god, like, you know, about the next, you know, Black Panther 2, who's writing for that script? You know, maybe let me talk to Ryan. We could get something in the works.
Please.
Yeah, don't ask, don't get.
This is it. What do I have to lose apart from my pride? Congratulations to Letitia. We expect amazing things to come from you in your future, and keep on doing the good work.
Keep on doing the good work.
Yeah.
Good sis. You're doing
Amazing, sweetie.
You're doing amazing, sweetie. By any chance, did any of you watch the Grammys this year? I didn't watch the Grammys.
Well, I didn't watch it.
Or do you know who?
I kind of know who. Oh, Cardi won.
Yeah, Cardi won.
Amazing.
I mean, please for Cardi B.
Cardi B.
And also her outfits. I watched this video where she went through her whole like outfits, and as in like the outfits were incredible. They were like precise. They literally like her first one. I think it's Mugler. I always pronounce it wrong.
Oh, the flower.
Yeah, the flower one. Stunning. And like the silk that she wore underneath the little tight mesh. They literally did another version to match her skin, and then they realized that one didn't really work that well, so they did it. It's so meticulous. Flew all the way to Paris, her team, to get like the outfits, and all of the outfits were like precise. It was so cool, and her performance was amazing. Obviously her stinky man who's just always there. Like
always.
Obviously, like, who is he now?
I'm like, why are you on
who
stage?
Who is he now?
But why are you on the stage?
Who is he? He knows that he has
overgrown
to attach.
Trousers.
He knows he has to attach himself to her now because she's got the limelight. What's his name again? I don't even remember. Offset. That's it.
I was trying to think it was Takeoff or Offset. He's Offset.
With his baggy trousers. She was posing, looking so fly, and she on the red carpet. He had to be there. And he was chewing gum on stage. On stage,
you gotta pop that gum.
I was so disgusted. You know, just men just love to leech. Anyways, apart from that, to Cardi B. Congratulations to the Carters. They weren't there because they don't need to be there.
They're tired of it.
They won.
No, they weren't there.
I don't think they attend anymore.
They threw the
Rock Nation brunch.
Grammy like Rock Nation brunch. When Beyonce was all hella shady to loads of people.
She tried to run away from that blogger. I almost lived. She was like,
and then there was a part in the video where she was telling Jay, can we go somewhere else?
Oh my gosh. Wouldn't you just die if you tried to approach Beyonce and she tried to run away?
She was actually running away.
I would just melt into a puddle on the floor. Honestly, like, what is my life if Beyonce runs away from you?
Because he turned around and he goes,
But he still pressed ahead with that photo.
He still got the photo.
Beyonce was like, no, I can't do this.
She's like,
but yeah, they won the Urban Contemporary Album, whatever.
For again, Everything is Love. They're always, why are they always in that?
Because the Grammy is. Let me not, anyways.
Yeah, anyway.
Before I don't get they're always in Grammys.
It. Ariana Grande didn't turn up, did she?
No, but she wore her Grammy dress and then she posted a picture of it.
Pay.
Thank you, next.
Shady ass people. All right, okay, moving on very swiftly. What did you guys think of the new Aladdin trailer? Because there were mixed reviews across the.
I'm not really here for these Disney remakes. Mm. I've yet to see one trailer or anything that I'm excited by that I think will rival the original.
Mm.
And it just annoys me because I think of all the amazing up-and-coming original scripts that will never see the light of day because Disney would rather bankroll Aladdin to do it frame for frame.
Yeah, it's
just boring. So I didn't have any high expectations. I watched a trailer and thought it looked a bit corny, but maybe that's okay for what it is.
Yeah.
I liked the first trailer because I thought the music was spectacular. Mm. I thought the music was amazing for the first trailer. The second one, I think people were like a bit weirded out at a blue Will Smith, and I'm like, but what did you expect? Like, did you expect a black genie?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Good point.
This is it. So I don't know. I'm okay with it. I want to see what it's like. I want to see.
I think most people were more frightened of the. they were like the people throwing memes after. They're like, me when I saw the blue genie after seeing all of these amazing colors. And they're like,
nah. I think it's funny because Will Smith is the type of actor who plays Will Smith in every role.
Yeah.
So it's not like you're looking at a blue genie played
you're
by Will Smith.
You're looking at blue Will Smith.
Yeah. And that's
kind of strange. I was watching Aladdin, and the genie has a few Will Smith traits, so I think that it's a good cast, but he doesn't need to do much because it's such a perfect role for him because he's playing himself essentially.
Yeah.
But obviously no one will rival. Is it Robin Williams who did?
Yeah. No
one could do it like him.
And it wasn't that long ago, it feels like.
I want to say 96. I want to say
94. It's one of the first films I saw.
Really?
Yeah, it's my favourite Disney film.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But we're going to talk about that a bit
later.
Your
favourite Disney?
Yeah.
Jasmine was my favourite Disney princess because she was like the first feminist I ever saw.
Let's talk about that. let's talk about that later because we might come back to that a bit later. All right. So that's it this week. Guys, if you've got any suggestions that you want us to talk about, anything that you see, throw us some ideas, something that we might have missed. Let us know.
Let us know what is going on around
the world. So, mostly lit this week. First of all, what are we all reading?
Oh.
Let's start with Alexandra as the guest.
No, I'm just saying what am I reading?
I'm reading An Orchestra of Minorities by Chigozie Obioma. It's quite a hefty book and it's on hardback, so I can't take it around with me, so I'm getting through it quite slowly. I'm about 60 pages in, but so far, I love it. Did you guys read The Fisherman?
Yeah.
I haven't read The Fisherman, no.
I love The Fisherman. It's like one of my favourites,
yeah.
Oh, is it really, because we did talk about it just before Christmas. And the plot was very thick. Is that what you're finding now?
It definitely feels like I'm 60 pages in and we're still in the setup
phase.
We're not really hitting the meat of the plot, but it feels like quite epic in its scope. Whereas, and also funnier than I expected. Mm. Like The Fisherman was just tragedy from beginning start to finish. This is not tragic yet.
Yeah.
And there's some strangely funny bits. I'm really, really enjoying it so far. I think he's incredible.
Okay.
Nice. Okay, I look forward to reading that. I need to get that book.
Cool. All right, so I'm reading A Man Called Uwe by Frederick Backman, not Blackman.
Non-fiction?
Fiction.
Ooh!
Fiction. It follows a man called Uwe around his life, and he's like just a grumpy old man who's like, he's lost his wife, and it's about him kind of, it's like an intergenerational, him being an old man, managing being so old and encountering younger people at the same time, as well as dealing with his own grief with the loss of his wife and various other characters in there. It's so funny.
How is he meeting other young people? Does he live with
neighbors? He's just irritated by a lot of people all the time. I think it opens with him being in the Apple store trying to get a computer. And he's like, young man, is this a computer? And they're like, it's an iPad. And they're like, he's like, so are you answering my question? Is it a computer or is it an iPad? And then having this, like, the whole chapter is him having this debate with this person. Can you touch a keyboard? If it's got a keyboard, it must be a computer, and then all these different things. But it's a really good book so far. It makes me laugh. There are some touching bits in there, and it does make me... I've been having this really... these epiphanies about, like, old age, not aging, but just old age, and, you know, that the loneliness that must come with it, and the kind of the distancing from all of, like, from everything around you, because the way that you grew up, the kind of that your life, everything's, when you're young, everything around you is yours, and then as you get older, you become more and more distanced away from the world that it is, in a weird sense. And he was kind of you know, he doesn't understand the way people, like, the way young people think. Like, he's like, somebody came around to ask him if they could, if he could fix their radiator. And he's like, don't you have a husband that can bleed the radiator? And they're like, well, no. And you know, and I think one of the husbands had Alzheimer's or something.
Yeah.
And he's like, so why can't you teach that boy to bleed the radiator, sort of thing? And it's just like the things that he would have known growing up and in that kind of time, the things that were expected of him to know. And he's trying to move it this time and trying to realize that not everybody would have that as a priority. Yeah. It's him trying to shift that. And it makes me think about when I get old, are we going to be like...
Yeah, like, you know, are we going to be in touch with technology in my day,
we were on Twitter.
You know what I mean? Like, we were on Twitter. What were you guys doing? Yeah. Like, you guys are all doing virtual reality. Why?
Why sort of are you time traveling?
Why are you time traveling?
God, that character sounds like my dad.
Really?
Yeah. It was just... Yeah. But it's a good book so far. Really, really funny.
Nice.
He's hella shady. He reminds me of myself, and I'm just like, I just get triggered every time I hear him talk. Ray, what are you reading?
I'm actually finishing up a book that we talked about, Freshwater, when we talked about it.
Oh, you finished off Freshwater?
Yeah, so I'm listening to that on Audible, and it's like the first book that, like, I've actually listened to ever in my life, apart from when I was read Kentucky's Kingdom when I was like in year six. So, and I really enjoy it, but the ending is just a bit, it's very hard, like, hard, because now, like, the main character, Ada, is completely in her marble, completely overtaken by the gods inside of her, and she's a completely different woman. It's almost like she's given in to her calling, in a way. And it's very frightening, actually. Like, it's very... Before, like, it's almost horror in a way, because you're just, like, thinking about the voices in your head and what they sometimes tell you, and where will you be if you completely give way to them, regardless, like, of, like, do you know what I mean? And it's just about how we have so many boundaries, and we make boundaries outside, but we also make boundaries within our own minds. And so it's quite interesting to know that what happens when you fully remove all the boundaries in your own head, what voices can come, who can come into the world. Do you know what I mean? So that's what I'm finishing off, and it's scary. It makes my heart thud. I'm just like listening to it, and I'm just like, oh God, it's just so vivid. And obviously an amazing writer to be able to conjure up that thought and that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
But these swear words, just put me right off.
What swear words?
Like, the main character will say, oh, fucking this and that. And I'm just like, oh, it's a bit intense. Like, it's so weird, because I was walking into it thinking it's going to be like a spiritual book. You know, it's going to be like, you know, very old time, very Achebe, you know. And then all these swear words, I'm like, oh, this is very different. And I think it is kind of that combination between old magic and modernity that don't really mesh well. And it's really shown through the writing. So
I've heard some incredible things about this book, but I haven't read it yet.
It's really good, but prepare to...
It's triggering, though.
To be triggered.
Okay. There's just things in there that you're like, is it my mind or is it the gods inside me?
Is it the gods inside
what
me?
What is the marble?
It's a bit...
Wow.
And quite similar to an orchestra of minorities in that case, and that is narrated by the spirit who is inside of the main character. She is like an Igbo... mythological tradition or spiritual tradition, so it might be good to... Is she Nigerian as well?
Yes. Half Nigerian, half Sri Lankan. But yeah, she speaks... Is it Igbo?
Yeah,
she has like little...
And Tamil in life
in the book. So
that is what I'm finishing off.
Cool.
Yeah, let's get cool. into the meat and the crux of the show.
So we've got Alexandra Shepherd here coming yes. to talk to us. Thank you for gracing us with your...
Thank you.
She's released her present. Debut YA novel called Oh My God.
Oh My God.
Following the life of Helen.
Helen Thomas.
Who is half model, half Greek god.
Yep.
Half-lifer.
Oh, you can't say that.
Hey, careful.
You can't say that. You can't say that. I know. I'm just throwing the N-word.
It's like, it's like mud blood, isn't it?
Like mud blood.
I was like...
yeah.
Anyway, so Alex, tell us about... Just tell us about you as a writer, first of all. Like, introduce yourself to the people.
Yeah, so I'm a writer as of... Well, I've always been a writer, I suppose, but as of January 2019, I'm an author, which is nice Ooh. To be able to say, because someone's paying me for this, which is also nice.
Great.
Yeah, I've always wanted to write YA. I've had the idea for this book since I was 20. Mm. It took me a few years to finally get my shit together in order to write it. Yeah. So I'm very happy that it's... come out, and I'm working on my next YA book at the moment. Ooh. So YA is definitely something I want to stay in.
Yep.
YA that's very contemporary, very London focused,
yep.
very domestic, more about family and friends mm. than yep. fantasy.
Yeah.
That's always what fascinates me, and that's yeah. what I want to write about.
I love the London focus bit.
I love
because
it.
Yeah.
When you were like, oh, just off the North Circular, I was like, this is just so close to home. Like,
I any of you guys it. From North London?
I'm from Northwest.
London. Northwest, yeah, yeah. Okay.
I liked the little colloquial terms, the yas. I literally highlighted some things. So I was like, oh my God, like, yeah. of course I'd say that. Do you know what I mean?
And when, which girl was it? Was it Daphne that's got the notebook that says,
oh, that's
about
Yasmin.
Yeah, Yasmin.
Proficient Yasmin.
Yeah.
I love Yasmin.
Yeah.
Me too.
That was hilarious.
But then, like, also quite like Daphne. I don't know. I like all of them. Yeah. They're really nice.
Okay.
But
so,
Alice is my fave.
So, we've got Oh My Gods here. So, let's have a bit of a rundown of the book. Helen Thomas.
Yep.
She's moved in with her dad.
Yep.
Who is Zeus.
Yep.
just throwing that out there.
Just in case you don't know.
And then she has to deal with all her half-siblings who are Greek gods.
Greek gods. So Aphrodite is her
waste.
Half-sister.
Anyway.
Well,
I mean, not
she's
waste.
A mess.
She's a mess.
She's fair.
Yeah.
She's a big
okay.
woman. A
and Eros.
Eros.
Who is Aphrodite's son.
Yep. Yeah, god of love.
God yep. of love. And then we have my favourite, Athena, obviously.
Yeah. Athena came in from her law.
From law firm. And I literally, when she came in, I was like, gang, that's me. Thank you very much. I've always loved Athena.
Apollo.
Apollo, who's like, you know, a musician. You yeah. know, calls themselves DJ underscore Sunny.
Yeah, right.
Literally
See?
Like... Okay.
I like the creativity
I
there.
Yeah. I was like,
constantly
I
like the, okay. updating his SoundCloud yeah. and bringing his link out to anyone who'll listen.
But what,
Yeah,
but I was going to ask, where did it come from? Like, where did the whole idea to be like, to use the Greek gods?
So I've always loved reading mythology. I think mm-hmm. it's something we study when we're like in year two
yeah.
and it really sticks with you. And yeah. some of the school visits I've done, it's like year sevens and eights and they're not doing Greek mythology on the curriculum, but mm-hmm. they still remember these stories and they're so well versed.
Yeah.
So I've always loved that. And I've always loved like teen diaries, like Adrian Mole, Princess Diaries,
yeah.
The Confessions of Georgia Nicholson. Those like really angst filled, everything is cringy and awful. I hate yeah. my family, mm. my friends, the only one who understands them sort of stories.
yeah.
And I guess I wanted to marry them in some way. But I got the idea for the book when I was watching an old Rita Hayworth film called Down to Earth.
Mm. Okay.
It's a musical. It's not very good. I wouldn't recommend you seek it out. But Rita Hayworth plays one of the nine Greek muses who lives in Olympus. And she mm-hmm. sees that a Broadway producer in New York is mm-hmm. doing a musical about the Greek gods. Mm-hmm. But it's very denigrating and not befitting their status, so she thinks. Mm-hmm. So the other muses persuade her to go down to Earth in the form of a human. Audition for the show because she's an incredible dancer as a muse of dance and sort it all out, and she ends yeah. up falling in love with the Broadway producer and they all live happily ever after.
So I'm definitely watching this. What do you mean? You've sold it so well.
It's just not one of those enduring classics of the uh-huh. time, but the music's good and Rita Hayworth is always fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I just got this idea of like, oh, gods on earth. And actually the idea of gods on earth isn't really new.
It's not
but like
a new
Percy
thing at all,
Jackson
no.
yeah.
and like so many books that think about gods on earth, but no one had ever done it with someone who looked like me or someone who lived in my neighborhood
yeah.
or in the UK who reflected my environment. Like Helen is half Jamaican like me.
Yeah.
She was 14 in the book. She lives in North London in Holloway, which is where I grew up.
Yeah.
So I was just writing the story for myself because I wanted to combine all these elements. It's a story I wanted to read.
Yeah, okay.
That's amazing.
Cool.
How did you like go about starting? Because you said that you had this idea when you were like 20.
Yeah.
how long did that process take?
Yeah, it was sort of like 4 or 5 years of starting and stopping because doing a book seemed impossible.
Yeah.
It seemed like insurmountable. But then I went on a course I've spoken about quite a lot, actually. It's an amazing course called Write Like a Girl. Girl spelled like G-R-R-L. And I did that when I was 25, 26. Mm. And it was all about helping women writers to establish not only a writing routine where you write regularly, but also get over the fear that stops you from sitting down and writing. Mm. And once I realised that it was fear that was stopping me from sitting down and writing, it was fear of failure. And I got over that and started writing 15 minutes a day. That built up. And then before I knew it, I had a manuscript. Wasn't that easy. It was, yeah. I'm just skipping it over.
But... skipping over the rough bits.
Yeah.
It's like giving birth. I don't remember the horrible editing. I've just got my book baby now and I can't wait to do it again. But
in terms of the characters in this book, I have a few faves, but who has your heart? Who tugs at you?
Oh, well, Helen definitely has my heart. She's like my younger sister.
Yeah.
In terms of writing it, Aphrodite was definitely the most fun to write because I think villains are always the most fun to write. She's not quite but she is awful.
She's an op. She's an op in the whole thing. Just constantly blocking greatness, blocking problems.
I like Eros, and I think that the way you wrote Eros was so well. Because
thank you.
When he came on, and you remember there was that party? Of course you remember, you wrote it. but there was this party that, you know, Helen threw, and there was a moment where you said, oh, you know, Eros is in the corner and he's talking to a few girls.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of like in passing because Helen was looking for somebody, or maybe she was on her way out, but she kind of looked to the side to see what Eros was doing. Mm-hmm. And then Eros said something like, oh, what did he say? He said something like, you know, if the effort is the same, then the attention will be the same. And then the girl on the side was like, oh, I can't remember.
It was some basic Pinterest.
Some stupid line, but it was so amazing. And I really loved it. And I saw it as a film because I was like, this is like a Percy, like this could be another Percy Jackson type film.
I think a TV series would be amazing. That would make my life. Yeah.
I saw it in my head, a party happening. She turns around, the camera just turns to Eros. He's saying this one line, the girls are swooning around him, and then she just moves forward.
He's doing agony aunt.
Exactly. And I was like, that is such an amazing moment. Yeah. And he actually made me calm. Like when I was reading it, I was like, oh.
Yeah, you see what I mean? Like, it's got those, like, I was saying this like before we started recording, but, you know, two things. Everybody has a family member which is similar to all of these family members. You know what I mean? They are just as dysfunctional as any typical large family. And just the fact that they're gods doesn't make them any different, that anything's changed. Like, you've got them bringing up personal history, you've got them bringing up like problems. You know, there's that bit where they're talking about the Trojan War.
And they're like,
well, you don't know about what happened to Paris. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so they're petty and they're all these different things. But you have that with a big family over Christmas dinner or whatever, a big festival. And that's what makes it so relatable and so like, oh, I can see I can see that cousin I hate there. And you know when we had beef when we were 7 because they stole my Action Man and he threw it out of the window and he watched it and they told me that the parachute would work, all this stuff. But like, it's good.
I think one thing that you dealt with in this book quite well is the idea of grief and loss, especially with the fact that Helen is always writing these letters to her mum. What kind of was the reason behind having that trope following the narrative?
So originally the book was a diary for a long time, and the diary, part of the diary, were the letters she wrote to her mum just as a way to keep in touch. And then during the editorial process, we decided to change it from a diary to like a standard first person past tense sort of novel. But I still wanted to keep this connection in, and I put one letter in at the front, and then when I went on submission, my editors were like, we really like these, can you do them all the way through? So it just sort of happened and developed. I wanted to make sure that she wasn't completely alone, and that you saw a side of Helen that you didn't see when she was with her crazy family.
Because it felt like almost in those letters she had a voice, because being in a house full of gods, it was quite chaotic. She kind of was having a hard time trying to find her place. She doesn't have these powers. She's constantly finding out new things about her family that she doesn't know. And it's like these letters provided a safe space for her.
Yeah,
to talk.
Which her grandma does as well, but her grandma doesn't live in London. So she only gets that over Christmas and school holidays.
And there were moments where you touched on like just the idea of loss, like little bits where it's like, you know, when the horn, is it the Horn of Plenty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Comes out and the food.
Just contemporizing all of the ancient stories.
Yeah. And that's that was really fun for me to
because,
write that.
I don't know whether, because I know you've been doing like a huge press run and like, you know, you've been going into schools and talking to them. How was it like explaining to them, because, you know, making them aware of Greek mythology, but in a way that they could relate to like that?
So I thought I would have to go in and have to do basics like Zeus is a god and he is a symbolized by lightning. But they know all of this stuff. And at the start of every session I do, I ask the students to like, put your hand up, tell me three facts about Greek mythology. And they're telling me about Titans. They're telling me about the golden apple and the Trojan horse. They're telling me about all the minor gods. They are so clued up because they still have cultural references like Percy Jackson. They still love Percy Jackson. True. And Greek references all around us. So I don't have to educate them, really. They're really passionate and interested. And I think whenever I go into the school, they haven't yet read the book, so I don't really talk about the book too much. But they are excited to see those references in something that they can recognize isn't just a dusty myth from the past. It's in their homes and in their cities and streets.
That's nice.
They've been really fun. I love school visits.
Yeah. Did you have any like personal experiences like that you brought into the book, like with regards to family stuff or?
I have a big family.
Yeah.
I'm the eldest of five girls. Yeah. I've got four younger sisters.
Okay.
Obviously, like I'm Jamaican as well, so I got lots of my Jamaican grandmas. Very different to Grandma Thomas. but there are references you can put in there, like the food and.
So when she asked for curry goat from the Horn of Plenty, I was like
but
though,
mum's version.
My own heart.
Mum's version.
So yeah.
She said that, I was like,
specify.
Yeah.
This thing.
That was so
can't
nice.
Come from anybody's hand. Sorry, go on.
And just like the location, Holloway, it's where I grew up. I guess that's it, really. I think I really wanted to. There are parts of me in every character in the book. But Helen, really, I wanted to make her own person. I don't want to try and glean too much from my own life in order to make a character. Because I feel like I'll eventually run out of material and I want to be in this for the long run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was it to have such, obviously, diverse voices and characters in it? Because it's almost seemed like your typical inner city school.
Yeah, it's my friendship group. So the friendship group that Helen has is one girl's white British, one is Ghanaian, and one is Turkish.
Yeah.
And that was my friendship group growing up when I lived in London.
Yeah.
So I asked my Turkish Cypriot friend to maybe like look at some of the words I use for Noor, who's the Turkish friend. But it felt very natural to me, and it felt much more natural to me to write that than to write a set of characters where everyone was the same, because that is what I grew up with.
Yeah. So how are you going to, I mean, I guess this is your first novel and it has a lot of like personal stuff and your own personal experiences. Moving forward now, how are you going to, is it that, do you think you're going to be writing what you know or venturing out into other sort of areas that you're not so, you just don't know, as in just characters that you may not be well versed in terms of their experiences? How are you going to exactly,
I think, a bit
those?
Of both.
Yeah.
I definitely want to keep writing about London because I don't think I'm done with London. I think it provides the most fascinating backdrop and you can just put in all these different characters. But I also want to challenge myself not only with like characters with different backgrounds but also genres that might not be the same as what I've written. So I've done this first person novel, maybe I'll do like a third person novel or time travel novel.
Ooh.
Or a novella, or there are other ways in which you can challenge. I want to keep challenging myself.
We love time travel.
We love a time travel.
Oh, do
you? And Alex love a time travel.
But continue.
I think the themes will remain the same. I always like writing about identity, family, race, things like that. Like I'll always continue to write about those things. Just the format of the novel might change.
Heard it here, guys. If it's a time travel book,
I'm all up in it.
You heard it here.
Yeah. I was going to ask, actually, you know, as a new writer, what was the publishing process like for you? Like, what was the, like, you know, a lot of people experience various road humps in trying to, like, you know, navigate that space, and what was it like for you? What were the challenges? What were the great bits?
Really good question. I feel like I was really lucky because my editors were incredible, and I never, when I got the, you know, the editorial notes after I signed to Scholastic, they would always ask, are you okay with these, this feedback, are you okay with this, these changes, because there are quite a few big changes. And I was always happy in that 99% of the changes they suggested, not only did I agree with, but they elevated the novel even further. Mm-hmm. And they elevated the novel further because my editors really got what I was trying to achieve with the story.
Yeah.
So I feel like I was really lucky with my editorial process. It was really, I wouldn't say it was fun, because obviously trying to take a novel in one direction based on editorial notes is really, really hard. Mm.
Was the Helen that you started off with the Helen that we see in this book?
In essence, yes. Yeah. And I think the editorial process just helped to make her more pronounced. Mm-hmm. Just helped to draw out her elements and make her more defined rather than changing her completely.
Yeah.
I know some writers have had that problem, and I don't know what I would do if I signed to a publisher and they took the book and said, okay, well, we need it to do X, Y, and Z. So I feel really lucky.
Yeah.
Cool. Nice. What tips do you have for people who want to write and want to write your YA in particular? Because,
yeah.
What would you like to have heard or known?
What would I have liked to have known? I think ignore the markets. Don't worry about what is the bestseller now. Don't worry about what genres are top. Yeah. Don't worry about what is topping the bestseller charts, mm-hmm. because you have to write what you want to read yourself.
Mm. Yeah.
Publishers and trends are fickle, and they could change by the time you finish your manuscript. So don't ever write for trends. Just carry on doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
And then for writing in general, just if you're not sitting down and writing, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
You have to. That is the most important thing. If you're not sitting down and writing, then nothing will happen. And if you can't write, then write about why you can't write. But as long as you're sitting down and making time for it, and making that time and place sacred, whether it's, for me, it was, I set my alarm an hour earlier and woke up early in the morning before I went to work, because I worked full time.
Yeah.
Some people do it on the weekend, some people do it in their lunch breaks. But you need to make that time, and you need to sit down and bring yourself to it.
Nice. And what do you want a young girl, I guess, reading this book to come out thinking or feeling?
That's such a great question. I would like her to feel that it's okay for her to use her voice, and it's okay for her that love comes in other places, that love and friendship may not always come from friends, love may not always come from a partner. You can carve out these spaces wherever you go.
I did think the love between the friendship group was nice.
That really amazing. Think that's the main love story.
So welcoming.
Because like, she walked into school and she was so nervous, her hands were clammy, and they just hit it off completely. I did like, who was it? Was it Yasmin that after Marco sent the first, that email.
Marco.
And then, that first kiss was nice though. When, when Marco sent the email, and then, I don't know if it was Yasmin or not, who said, well, this boy definitely knows his way around a keyboard. I was like, oh, that's so nice. Yeah.
I think he's a bit too charming for his own good.
That's true.
It's funny, like, no one really likes Marco that much.
Really? I think...
My boyfriend hates him. Hates him, like, swears under his breath while he's reading. I'm like, what are you Marco. Talking about? It's like, oh, just Marco doing my head in.
I quite like Marco.
You know,
Marco,
he's trying a thing.
Yeah.
Marco, he's trying to flex.
Marco did his business. But also email... That's a bit weird. Here's my email.
Yeah, it is a bit weird.
Yeah. All right, guys. Any other questions you have?
No, I don't. But guys, just make sure you go and pick up the book. It's an amazing read.
It's so, and
it's
like,
so different. It's like it challenges you in so many different ways, just to kind of rethink the way that we kind of approach.
It's very inner mythology. City London. It's very now mixed with like the old. And I think the relationship between like Zeus and Helen is quite nice, distant at first, but. Mm.
Yeah,
distant at first, but it comes together. And
he's not good at this father thing at first. He's not got a good track record.
Definitely
he's
not.
He's just like, you know, just bed. Just like, give the people the children. Give the people the children, and that's
man
it.
Man like. Falls in love in 2 days. Like, what are you doing? This is why he has so many babies.
Kids, so many kids. Question, actually.
Oh, God.
Was Hercules half god? He was half god, wasn't he? Or was he full?
Hercules was full god.
Oh, you think he was full god?
Yeah, and then he remember, he got put down to earth. His powers were stripped. Because something happened. Oh, I forgot what happened. But yeah, he was given to adopted.
I think
Hera
was made jealous in some versions of the story. Yeah. So he grew up as a mortal, essentially. But he was like half mortal in terms of his powers, because he wasn't completely immortal.
Yeah. But he was definitely full god. Oh. Definitely think, yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Oh, I like Hercules. Love they the should
film.
Do a.
I loved that film so much.
We are the muses, goddesses of the arts. And protectors of heroes.
Oh, yeah.
Heroes like Hercules. Honey, you mean Hercules.
They just threw that gospel
like to make some sweet
Sorry, it's like
they just
my
threw that gospel spin right on this thing.
Listen, I just listened to the
soundtrack. The gladiator, Hercules. I was like, woo.
And my favorite last song.
They are my favorite.
Take me to the church.
Say I'm in love. I listened to that song and I just start crying.
It's a great soundtrack. And also Megara, I think, is a really great heroine. Like, she doesn't take any shit. I love her.
She's literally almost anti-hero in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think she's anti-heroine?
Yeah, because she was a bad bitch, you know.
She didn't care. She was just cast out in it. She was just out here just living by herself. And then this guy just crying came and just skedaddled her life. And now she's singing songs in a fountain.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Can you imagine?
Looking at that. Looking for the... Anyway.
No way, I won't say it. No. You swoo, you sigh. Why deny it? Oh, it's too cliche. I won't say I'm in
love.
Come on.
I can't sing, otherwise I'd definitely join you guys, but no one needs to hear anything.
We're a bit mad, innit?
Well, thanks so much for that. Yeah. Alrighty, so... Mostly flicks. Are you guys watching anything?
So I didn't watch what you watched. Okay,
That's fine. That's cool.
We can talk about it.
No. But what are you watching? Have you been watching anything this week?
I'm watching Timeless.
Still watching Timeless.
Absolutely, it's on my list.
It's so good.
Alex recommended it to me. I'm obsessed. I watch it in my lunch breaks.
Yeah. Okay, I'll add it.
And definitely watch it because, you know, now, you know, mostly lit. And Alex are writing a book about time travel. Listen, yeah.
And Alex is writing a book about time travel.
I'm just going to put it on her. And then she has to come back. So
why are we not doing time jumping, Alex?
I know,
Alex. Can
we
just bounce through time, please,
Alex? Oh, my God.
But yeah, what are you watching?
I know I'm about 50 years too late, but I'm just got into Drag Race. I'm watching season 10.
RuPaul.
I've never watched it before.
It's really, really fun. Lots of puns. It's just easy, and I just want something easy at the moment.
Yeah.
A lot of my friends said to watch it from season 3.
Oh, okay. I started from season 10.
Oh, you started from season 10?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So you just jumped right at the back. Okay.
Too many episodes in a row does hurt your eyes, though. It's so bright.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
What is it? Is it like America's Next Top Model?
But with drag queens.
Oh, yeah. But it follows the same template.
Pretty much, yeah.
I think Miley Cyrus is a judge this season or something.
Yeah, there's a different judge every week. Okay. But these artists are incredible. They have to be seamstresses, comedians, script writers, makeup artists, all in one. They really are incredibly talented.
Mm, okay. Oh, how about you, Alex? What are you watching?
What am I watching? I just started watching The Umbrella Academy on...
Oh, yeah.
Netflix yesterday. So a billionaire adopts 7 children who were born on a random day in 1989 to women who have not had sex or were not pregnant, and they just became pregnant and they gave birth to these children.
Almost
dramatically. Yes, you heard me correctly.
Like
Virgin Marys, but so on had, speed.
So they had kids.
They had kids without being pregnant. I mean, they never had sex. For example, they never had sex, and then they were like, oh, now I'm pregnant. Oh, here's 9 months. Here's the child. It was like, I wake up one day, oh my God.
I'm pregnant.
At 12 p.m., their belly just expands, and they become pregnant, and then thing. But then this billionaire, he sources them out, the mothers out, basically. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, how much do you want for this one? I will buy them off you and I adopt them. And he like not runs tests on them, but he kind of trains them because they're a phenomenon sort of thing. And like they have special abilities.
You're really introducing me to these amazing
barring
shows.
One. Because the thing is, I get the email from Netflix and they're like, oh, have you seen this new trailer going to come out February 15th? And I'm like... Netflix knows me a bit too well. You know what I mean? They're like, oh,
yeah,
hey,
that
Alex.
Algorithm is literally accurate.
You know, they're like, hey, Alex, how you doing? Between them and Spotify, I have no idea. I have no idea.
I can just imagine the guy being like, hey, Alex, how you doing? Like,
yeah, we see that you've been watching this. Are you going to finish it? I'm just like,
no. Okay, so how about this show? We think you like it. Please tell it to Ray on the show.
Yeah, there we go. See what I mean? But yeah, so that's it. I'm watching that, and I started watching this Canadian sci-fi film, the sci-fi series. It's called Continuum. And it's set in 2077. I don't know what it is about time travel, but it's just drawing me in at the minute.
You know, but I'm gonna watch this. Is it on Netflix as well?
Yeah, yeah. It's called Continuum. I think they've got four seasons. 2077. The world is run by corporations, even more so.
More so.
and like 2077.
Capitalism on fleek.
Because you know, whenever it goes so far in the 20, like in obviously in the year 2000s onwards, I'm like, would I be alive in 2077? God willing, I'll be there. So hopefully, it's like when I watched Back to the Future and they went to 2015.
And you're like, oh.
And then we get to 2015 and I'm like,
unimpressed.
We still have no hovering cars.
You don't. Yeah.
You lied to me. I wanted to hover in cars. But anyway, so Continuum's good. They sentenced some people to trial and then they jumped back in time to 2012. And so they're dealing with the fact that they're from 2077 in 2012. Mm. And they're like,
so this
you
is
know,
like timeless.
You know, like everything's just like basic to them because their technology is so far ahead. And so, really good show so far.
Fantastic.
That's what I'm
watching. I need to be careful with all these good shows because I've got work to do.
Yeah, you do have work to do. You do have work to do. I watch it like really, like once I'm done for the day and I just need to like fall asleep or something, I just whack them on. Next, we've got an interview with Ray speaking to. Want to introduce
the,
it?
Yeah, guys. So I went and interviewed the incredible Matthew Croke and Jade Owen, who play Jasmine and Aladdin, respectively, at the West End in the huge Aladdin production. It was such an amazing time talking to them. Mm-hmm. Jade, like, loves, like, you'll find out anyway, but I was thinking about you actually when I was talking to her. Yeah, you'll find out. Oh. So I went to speak to them and it was incredibly fun. Make sure that you go and watch Aladdin. It's brilliant. There's loads of Aladdin remakes and we're here for it. So
have a
listen. All right. Hello, guys.
Hey.
Hello. Thank you guys so much for talking to me today. I'm really excited because when I got told I can interview you guys, I lost it. Mainly because, right, and I think, like, there's going to be a lot of pressure on Jade today because... mainly because Jasmine was my princess. You know how you're young,
Yeah.
And you have the princess.
She was absolutely Jade's princess as well.
Yeah. Right? Really? Yeah. Oh, yeah. So this is fantastic, right? So I was like, Jade, like, Jasmine was mine. You know, I claimed her for everyone. But just like overall, how has the experience been, like both of you performing in the West End and taking on the roles of Aladdin and Jasmine?
It's been incredible. Like the process of auditioning, like when you first hear about the opportunity and the role anyway, it's like... Just to be considered to be going into the room and to be seeing, you know, you're sitting in a waiting room full of like 20 other people that basically look like you. You know, it's like you want to think I am special, but at the same time you think, gosh, as if I'm really gonna get this, you know.
Yeah.
So I think Matt had a similar experience.
Yeah.
But when I found out, when I got the phone call, I remember I was sitting on the floor, I just got out of the shower, my agent called.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is about to be either the best phone call of my life or the worst. And I was like, I don't know if I want to answer this. I really just took a few minutes.
Yeah.
Like, should I or shouldn't
should I?
And I answered it. And he's so cruel. He told me, I'm so sorry, but, you know, you did a great job. But basically, they've gone in a different direction. You weren't quite what they were looking for. But, you know, well done anyway. Yeah. And I was like, it's okay. I'm okay with that. Because I didn't dare let myself dream that I could actually do it. So I was like, that's fine. And then it was silent. And then he's like, I'm joking. And I just cried. I just sat there on the floor in my towel crying. And then I was like, I'll call you back later.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, and that's then, phenomenal.
Yeah, it's just like the mad experience of going for all your fittings and, you know, seeing yourself as a Disney princess for the first time. I mean, it's like you said, you know, for me, Jasmine was like, I loved all the Disney princesses, but she was the first one that came along. I was like, wow, she really looks a bit like me and my sister.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was like, you know, and I loved her strength, and she's so sassy.
She's a little
and
feminist, isn't she?
Yeah. And she was amazing. And she's like, I don't need any man. I don't need a prince, actually, because most of the time the princesses were all about finding their prince to make them happy.
Yeah.
So I just always found her really inspirational from such a young age. And then there I was looking at myself, like in my turquoise and the tiara, and all of a sudden I'm singing A Whole New World with Matt. And I'm like, how did this happen? Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank
you. How about you, Matt? How was it? Like, when did you get that phone call that you've got it?
Yeah, well, for me, I was trying my best to kind of make a change in my career. Mm. For the last 10, 11 years, I've been in lots of different West End shows, which have been amazing.
Yeah.
But I was at that point of my life, career, that I wanted to kind of stop being in the ensemble and understudy in these amazing roles and have a role for myself.
Yeah.
So when my it was the start of 2017, and it was the first job that I'd ever gone to walk into a room to be seen for the role, as opposed to being seen first and then they kind of tell you what you're kind of right for and then maybe some understudy and scripts and things like that.
Yeah.
And I got that call, and I'd also the day before been auditioning for another show for a role that I'd always had my eye on and I always wanted to play. It wasn't anything like Aladdin, but it was a great role that I could imagine myself doing. And my agent called and said that I'd got that. But I was expecting a call to hear about Aladdin either way. And this other audition had been, you know, I've been waiting for a few weeks, and they said, but we're going to have to turn it down. And I was like, why?
No.
Because I was like, oh my God, I've got the first role ever. You know, that's amazing. And I was so happy to hear that I'd been offered a part in a show, and we're gonna have to turn it down. And I just said, but why? Because you've been offered Aladdin in the West End. And I was like, I'm gonna have to call you back. Like, this is too much. And I was with my sister at the time on the way to Sheffield, because I was going to teach at our school that we have in Sheffield together. And I got her around the neck, like hugging her, but it was so tight, it was like I'd got her in and like this headlock. And she's like, let go. And I was like, I'm gonna have to call you back. So I was just so excited. Outside King's Cross, people must have thought I was a madman.
That was
really cool, because I was so happy about the first job, and then I had to turn it down. It was crazy.
But in general, like, you seem to be having such a great time. What has been, I guess, the hardest thing about this experience, or the things that has challenged you in a way that is quite unexpected?
I would say, because this is now my third year in Aladdin, so from opening night to now, you go on such a journey with the text and the script, and even though you say the same lines every single night, you kind of have these peaks and troughs, I guess, because you go from in the beginning having so much adrenaline and the material being fresh and new that you're just like flying about the place and it's amazing. And then you get comfortable, which is a nice place to be, because then you're not panicking about what you're going to say next. But then you go beyond that, where you know it inside out. It's like autopilot. And then the smallest of things could happen. Like, somebody could just cough in the audience in a slightly different place to where you're used to. And it can completely throw you.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's my line? And there's some moments where the lines are just coming out of my mouth and my head saying, you don't know what you're about to say, but it's happening.
Yeah.
And it's not for lack of focus, because you're more focused than ever, but it's just so difficult to keep yourself totally, totally present as if you're saying these lines for the first time ever. And I found that that's really helped me, actually, as an actress and a performer, to really like dig deep. It's one thing to sort of do a run for like a few months, but when you're in your third year, you know, it really tests you. But I think it's helped me evolve as an actress, actually. You always find new things. Every night the performances are different, because if you really do, you know, hopefully my job to the best of my ability, you respond naturally to whatever your partner gives you. It shouldn't ever be a case of I always say the lines exactly the same. If Matt's in a different mood, he might say his line slightly. Yeah, so then my response is going to be different, because that's just how you communicate in everyday life. But it's a challenge, but a great one.
Yeah.
And I think, it's been for the best for both of us. I've noticed it with Matt as well. Yeah. Like, I think from when you first started to now as well, like, some days we're feeling more tired, so that maybe we're a bit slower, or we go the opposite way, actually. When we're really tired, we pick up the pace, because we know we've got to keep driving it forward. But there are moments as well where it's amazing. I've noticed this too, where I don't have to say anything to Matt, because we can't communicate on stage if something happens, you know, like out of the norm.
Yeah.
So you're saying like a million things with your eyes to the other person.
Like, look left.
Like, just pick up on my brainwaves right now. And it makes you really in tune, you know? And I think those are really nice skills to develop.
Because then when you get backstage and you say, Were you thinking this? Were you, and he's like, yes. Yeah. Like, I knew it.
Yeah.
I knew it. Because actually, you know, it's been absolutely incredible. And working with people like Jade for me is just, I've learned so much from all the cast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's one of them things that is just amazing when you're on stage every single day doing the same thing, just to work with people like Jade, because we don't actually manage sometimes to have to speak that much before the show, because we're on our own paths in backstage, you know. We've got to get ready, and the amazing backstage team that we have like concentrate on getting us ready for the show. We obviously always kind of touch base with each other, but then actually it's how we communicate through our eyes and our minds, because we say the same things every day because of the script. So I've noticed that as well. It's actually really fun. So kind of like guess what it is, and we always get it right.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
What has been like the thing for you that has thrown you all, has been a bit challenging, or that was also unexpected when you stepped into the role?
I've got to say, even there are days when maybe you think, it's a Friday evening show and you've done six already or something like that, and you're on your way and you do everything that you can to mentally and physically get ready for the show. And even if you're feeling slightly sluggish or anything like that, as soon as the show starts, it goes.
Yeah.
Because it is such an incredible show to be part of. And it's a dream show for me, and I know that it is for everybody. And as soon as you hear that orchestra start, the overture.
Yeah.
For me, I just feel that adrenaline and buzz going through my body. I just think,
this is where you should
be. I'm the luckiest guy in the world, and I just don't ever really find it. As soon as it starts, the struggle is kind of gone.
Yeah.
And even probably most shows beforehand, it's not even there anyway.
That's phenomenal. All right, big question. How does the magic carpet work? All right. I even went on YouTube.
Really?
And I was like, there was like this little cameo saying, is it magnets? And they tried to
show
it.
I know, the theories are amazing.
I know. And I don't know if you guys, you're not allowed to tell me, are you?
Well,
all I know is that I meet a guy and he's called the genie, and he comes out of a lamp and he has magical powers, and he puts me on a carpet with Princess Jasmine, and we have the best time together. That's all I know.
What you're trying to do.
That's all we know.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, I tried. I tried for the listeners. I really tried. But guys, go out and watch it. We do a literature podcast, and the main thing that we always ask people is, what is the book that inspired them? Or the piece of literary text, or what are you reading currently that has really inspired you and made you, I guess, the person that you are, that has enabled you to step into any roles, I guess, especially this one. So, Jade, what is the book for you?
So, I am... this is going to get quite deep. So
Okay.
I found an author called James Van Praagh, and I stumbled across him. And he is somebody that's a medium and deals in like all the kind of psychic, I guess, more supernatural stuff. I've throughout my life, I've kind of always had unexplainable things that have happened. My dad's blind. He would often have dreams and almost like premonitions and things that would happen, and then they'd end up coming true. And I was very fearful of that stuff. It freaked me out because I just couldn't process it. And I kind of had like an out-of-body experience. And I didn't understand what happened. And I was trying to research this whole thing. I'd spoken to my dad about it, and he had said to me he often had similar things. And, for my family, my sister and my mum and my brother just think I'm mental. They call me a hippie and a crystal basher because I love crystals. So, and I light my incense.
Crystal basher?
Yeah. You're a crystal basher. Like, shut up, Shireen. So, you know, my only way of trying to find out more about the topic was me researching, and I stumbled across this author called James Van Praagh. And I even feel like my connection to Aladdin has been one that's quite like spiritual, supernatural, because I was told years ago, before I was even in musical theatre, that I would be singing a song which would be quite high up, and she said to me, it's quite a spiritual song, but she said, you'll be with someone, you'll be perfectly safe, but you'll be coming down really slowly and there'll be a moon behind you. And I told Matt about this because I didn't realise until way into the run that it was this show, because one day, this kind of the way that the carpet and everything is timed. We never see what's behind us. We're always looking out front.
Yeah.
But I must have just like timed it slightly differently, and I caught a glimpse of the moon behind me, and I was like, oh, this is the moment that she was talking about. Yeah.
And so I started reading this guy's books, James Van Praagh. And I mean, I don't know. I think it's all about learning to raise your vibration and to be a positive person. And I guess that in terms of the way I'm sure we all have, everybody does, but there've been some massive tests and obstacles in my life and plenty of times where I feel like I absolutely couldn't get back up.
Yeah.
And that book really, really helped me think, okay, yeah, I just got to approach it differently. This is like a game and it's like completing levels. This is how I kind of see that. And I just have to figure out what to do to get through
to
that level.
Level. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's something that now it sort of runs through every part, every aspect of my life. And I then went on to reading all of his books in the whole series. Yeah. And I think it's amazing. So I would say he's my biggest inspiration. Yeah.
That's so interesting. I love
I know. Like, I'm like,
I know. I was like, how do I condense this?
No,
like,
and hard. I remember actually, because I was lucky enough to, Jade had already met the amazing Alan Menken previous, and I came into the show slightly later. So then I had the opportunity as well. And she said, when you meet him, can you just ask him if there's anything behind the song A Whole New World other than Aladdin and Jasmine falling in love? And, you know, and just because it always stays in your mind, doesn't it?
Like,
this time when she realised the moon is obviously up high and she's going to be on stage up high and singing and be, you know, dream job or whatever it was, you know, and he was like, yes there is.
Were you told that by like a fortune teller?
Which is so funny as well, because in the show there is a fortune teller, and there's even a line that Matt said, and I remember seeing it in the script, and it says Egyptian jade fit for a princess. And I remember seeing that before I went into the audition, and I was like, I feel like this is a sign. Like, and then my lucky number has always been 13. It's always been very powerful for me.
Oh, that's a weird lucky number.
I know, but it really is. And A Whole New World is number 13 in the score. And every time I auditioned for Aladdin, it was either on the 13th or at 1 o'clock 13. Yeah. So I was just like, there's something here that's like saying to me, this is for you, you know?
This is insane.
I know.
My mind is blown.
And I think this is why, I said to Matt, like, I always get goosebumps when we take off on the carpet. Like, it's the one thing that really I'm like, oh, I just can't believe it. It's like, I don't know. I like thinking that there's a plan for us all. It gives me comfort to know that, you know, I can overthink stuff and I'm trying to be in control, but actually it's going to be okay. Everyone's going to be fine because there's already a plan in the end. So you just have to like enjoy the journey. Yeah.
How about you, Mel? What's your book? What's the book for you?
You know what? I'm not. I'm a bad book reader. I've got to say, in all honesty, I have all the right intentions, and I've picked up so many books, and I've just put them down. But one, the one thing I do agree with Jade is that I am really interested in the kind of books that help us performers, because especially for me, as I mentioned, being in the ensemble for such a long time, which was great, I knew that I had it in me to go further, and I knew that I needed that push and I needed that belief, and my amazing wife always pointed me in the right direction to read books like that, and books that help you visualize things and put it out there and believe and help you believe in yourself. And I did go through a number of books auditioning for Aladdin, and I just remember walking down the street and just putting my headphones in and going to these auditions and really imagining myself on stage and visualizing everything, even listening to songs like Million Miles Away and the end of Act One, literally like all the time. And this was material that I wasn't asked to learn for the show. I just put it on 24/7 and pictured myself doing it. And Nicola, my wife, goes, it works, doesn't it? So I'm really into them kind of books as well. Although on holiday, I do love like a
nice trash
girl on a train, you know, kind of get really into something like that.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah. Okay. Before we wrap up, we've got like budding young people who want to get into theatre and acting. What would be the one advice that you would give them to be on their way?
I think to use rejection as something that strengthens you and makes you a better performer.
Yeah.
It's so easy to flip it the other way and be like, I'm not good enough, and to let it knock your confidence.
Yeah.
But there have been so many times where I've auditioned for roles and I thought I've been perfect for the role, and then I don't get it and I can't understand, and I'm devastated. And then equally I'll go into a room and think, well, I'm not going to get this, and then I end up getting it.
Yeah.
So it's just about like just changing the mentality, the mindset, to be a positive one, to know in reality that probably 80% of the auditions you go in for, you're not going to get anyway. And that is the fact, you know, and unfortunately, because we're in entertainment, most of the time, even when you book a job, you get to the end of the job, you're unemployed again and you start all over again. So it's fine. Just keep enjoying the process. We're lucky that we are our own bosses. You know, we don't have to sit at a desk 9 to 5 every day. But just use it to fuel you and just keep learning and absorbing from other performers as well. You can constantly be learning from other people.
Perfect. How about you, Matt?
Absolutely. I think just... you're going to get a lot of knockbacks and mentally preparing yourself for that, but turning it into positive. I mean, I'm repeating what Jay just said, but just you have to be your number one believer because there will be people that won't believe in you, but there will be. So that's why you have to do it yourself.
Yeah.
And just being strong enough and being able to, you're willing to learn and keep learning. And just if you don't believe in yourself, it won't happen. So always remember, whatever happens, you are good enough. It's just waiting and being patient.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you
so much. You guys have been wonderful.
Thank you.
And please go and listen to the podcast. It's called Mostly Lit. And wishing you all the best. And guys, please go and watch Aladdin, because if you're not, what are you doing? You've already failed. Come on, guys. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Catch you guys next time. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Fabulous. So that was the interview, and hope you enjoyed. Make sure you go and see Aladdin. Obviously, the Will Smith version is coming out, so you're going to see that soon.
Make sure you do that.
The Blue Genie.
But yeah, so I want to bring back to this Aladdin debate that we were talking about, the conversation at the beginning. But what did you guys think of Aladdin in general, like as a movie?
He's a weak. The movie.
Why?
I haven't seen it in a very long time.
I was trying to watch it yesterday.
The images and the songs are still really vivid, despite that.
I actually didn't like the soundtrack that much.
You didn't?
I mean, I was six. What did I know about good soundtrack?
For me, because I listened to it, and then I watched it again when I was a bit older, and it doesn't match up to, like, Lion King, Lion King 2, Mulan, Hercules. Mm. It doesn't match up soundtrack-wise, but I do think that Jasmine was pretty revolutionary at that age. To have a young girl be like, to have a young woman of colour, and then for me it was the first like glimpse of Islam in a way, because there was like mosques and stuff, and when I was watching it, I was like, oh my god, like this is a part of me, and that's why I really loved Jasmine. And then when she like was like, I don't want to marry, I don't want to be forced to marry, I want to find love, and that, I don't know why, as a child, I really connected with that.
Yeah.
Even though I wasn't going to ever be forced to marry. But I just was like, oh, like, this young woman has a choice. So that's why, for a long time, Jasmine was my favourite Disney princess.
I love the fact that she had a tiger as a pet. Can you imagine? Like, what was the tiger's name again?
Was it Shah? No. I don't know. I just remember... Prince Ali, Uzi, Ali Ababa. It's like one of my favorite songs.
I think it's like once I watched the trailer for the new Will Smith one, I'm trying to think, like, questioning how close it's going to be to the cartoon, because obviously the Jungle Book was really intense.
Yeah.
And
is this the one with Idris?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a really intense adaptation.
That was.
And like, although they had the same music, they had the same, they followed the same storyline, but it was very dark.
It was very dark.
Like when Shere Khan killed the wolf, I was like,
literally, I was sweating.
I don't remember this from the cartoon.
Yeah, the trailer did look intense.
Yeah. But so this is the one reason why I'm really like excited for these new live adaptations of them, because they're just going to be a lot stronger, and
I don't know where they're going to. Beyonce King is going to be great, personally.
I wonder what they're going to add to it though.
They can't add anything new to it, because even the trailer that we saw was
a frame for frame remake.
I don't mind that per se, because I really loved Lion King, so. The Beyonce King is going to be great.
But you said you didn't like, you weren't here for the live remake.
I
worry that we're just not getting, I think it's a disservice to many film goers.
Yeah.
Like, for example, Toy Story 4.
Yeah.
I laid Toy Story 3 to bed. I cried. I wept real tears in that
Did
cinema.
You?
Yeah.
I've never been into Toy Story.
Oh, okay.
No, I said this the other day.
I was like, this is boring.
I was like, nah. Someone was like, are you going to watch Toy Story 4? And I was like, after what they did to me in Toy Story 3.
What happened? Who died? Andy?
No.
No, it was a very beautiful fulfilling.
Alex said,
who died? Andy. What kind of thing? He went to uni and he gave his toys away.
So as you do.
Yeah, but the toys almost died.
Still have toys?
The toys almost died.
How? Didn't they get a new owner? Like, didn't they go to charity?
You have to watch it. I can't be out here spoiling anything because it's going to spoil the emotional moment. But no, but I think essentially he gave his toys to his sister, and his sister didn't want some of the toys as well. So yeah, they were good because they're growing up.
Yeah.
But it's that, with Toy Story, it's that whole leaving your childhood behind sort of thing and what connects you to your childhood up until a point. And then obviously we've connected with these toys as living things.
Yeah.
So the toys now, they're technically immortal until they break, right?
Yeah.
So if humans are growing up and not passing their toys down to their children and whatnot, where do these toys go? Toy Story 3, preschool. Now, you've got some wayward...
Alex is so stressed.
I'm stressed because you've got some wayward children who are...
It is a stressful scene to watch.
You've got some wayward children who are like swinging these toys around, throwing them this way, that way, breaking them. So it kind of makes you think, like, again, like about, you know, what it takes to leave your childhood behind.
Yeah.
For them to... And most of our generation left it behind at Toy Story 3. So, yeah, why is Toy Story 4 even being produced?
Maybe he's got kids and he's found his toys.
No, I think it's a completely different storyline, separate one.
Yeah, it's lots of money, guaranteed.
Well, yeah.
R.I.P. Andy and Amanda.
So, do you have the culture question?
Yeah, so we got a culture question. Our new section where you can write into us and ask us any question that you have pertaining to arts, culture, music, film, theatre, books, all of it. And
a side note, as of next week, we're going to put it in the middle of the show. So, it'll be after, mostly lit.
So, we got an email from Ellie Castelli who asked, when does art become art?
When does art become art?
Yes.
No.
Right? Alex.
I don't know.
What do you mean? Think.
Don't ask me questions.
I think it becomes art when it's created with intent.
Oh, so you think unintentional art is an art?
What is unintentional art?
So, for example, what if a child, there's quite a few of these, children will just get a painting and, you know, they'll just make mess, right? Mm. And then their parents will be like, oh my God, this is the next Leonardo da Vinci. and they will put them up on...
Who decides?
You know, whether that's their walls or some people, even, you know, rich folk, they'll put it up in galleries because they can. Work of a toddler. And therefore, and people will stand there and look at it. So is that art?
I think from the time it perhaps goes into a gallery, if people are moved enough by it, I would say that when I mean intent, it means like you want to express yourself and you've chosen this medium and this moment in time to express yourself. Mm. I think it becomes art.
Yeah. Interesting. So I think what you said is quite pertinent. You said if people become moved by it. And that's how I think. Like for me, art is about impact and how whatever it is that you're creating impacts people, whether it's a small impact, it could be just one person who turns around and looks at something and something happens. Very small, you can't even measure it. And I think for me, that is art. And it's something that has impact and it can be in various forms. So that's why I'm like, could unintentional art be art? Possibly, because a lot of the pieces that we have but a bit unintentional, but I guess I'm not sure.
I guess depends on what the art form is as well, because I mean a lot of these books are successful after
that was
their
intentional
death, or after like how many years of them being published. You know what I mean? I guess it all depends on the audience at the time, does it not? I mean, like for Leonardo da Vinci, he did the Sistine Chapel, right?
I think it was Michelangelo.
That's Michelangelo.
Him, one of them ones. With the artistic names. Him, yeah. So obviously, would they have seen him doing that as art, or would they just say, oh, this is our decorator? See what I mean? do you see what I mean?
He nearly went blind doing that.
That was very intentional, I think.
Even as an intentional
But also,
thing.
It was very impactful.
That's a really good point, like, whether it's decoration or art.
Charles Dickens was just writing them books because no one had TV. But like, if you look at it now, like he's been a huge part of the canon
because they're
impacted. You know what I mean? Like they do have strong cultural relevance to this country, etc.
Yeah, sorry. So Alex says something that is created with intention.
Mm.
I say something that has impact. What do you say? Audience?
Audience, maybe.
Yeah.
Audience, time.
And I think that's really interesting. Got to think about the gatekeepers and who decides what is art and how that changes.
Yeah. Even like looking at the literary canon that we have today, people who will help herald up these, you know, works of writers who I would say some are rubbish, but they're heralded up because there are these gatekeepers, as you say. Do you think we currently have any gatekeepers like currently?
Absolutely.
In terms of our world that we exist in now, not even that our world, but our
generation,
I would say our, I don't know, the black,
yeah,
arty,
I guess. I mean, like,
realm.
Yeah, I mean, you have the established black British canon, I guess.
Mm. Who's controlling the black British canon now, do you say?
I don't think it's necessarily control. I think we're trying to figure out what that is at the minute, I guess. I think people,
I don't know,
because
the answer to that.
You know what I mean? Because after 20 or so years, like, who knows where we're all going to be at and what kind of stories are going to be being told.
Oh my God, we'll be real up there.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
So, fingers crossed.
But it's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Another one.
Okay, so we have another question. And this is by Lena Waith Sidepart.
That's such a hilarious name.
Hey guys, so I'm big on theatre. So what book do you think would make and only work as, brackets, as opposed to film, an amazing play? Do you get to see a lot of theatre? What are the strengths and pitfalls of a story being told in each of the mediums, film, written, or theatre?
Okay, this is like an essay question.
I know. All right, so let's break it down. First thing, what book do you think will make an amazing play?
Ooh.
I know. That's a really tricky one.
What book would make an amazing play?
I can think of plays I've seen that were really good books, like The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, that translated really well to the theatre.
Did it?
Yeah.
That was a really good book. I read it when I was really
young. I'm trying
to think. Oh my God, this is very hard. I'm just thinking of
Has Things
favorite.
Fall Apart been a play? I'm sure it has. I would have thought it has.
I haven't seen it.
Let me see.
But do you think it will make a good theatre production?
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, I see that. Yeah. That could be quite good. Has it been a play?
Yeah, it's been a play.
Yeah.
What elements of a book do you think translate well into theatre?
I think it's the... Obviously, it's the story, but I think it's more the live element of it. Like, you bring everything, because I think it can be transformed. I think it can be altered into easier into a stage play.
Yeah.
Because
seeing the play of the fisherman.
Yeah.
I didn't think that would make a good play.
Did you see it?
Yeah, and it was a two-man play, and it was
two-man.
Yeah, two-man.
They played all the brothers.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. I never thought that would work like that, but it did because of the creativity of the playwright.
Mm. I do think that a book that is told in third person will make a good play, because it's almost like there is an omniscient person looking in, and that's who we are. A book that's written in first person might struggle, in my opinion, a little bit, only because you miss all the internal dialogue that
really
happens. So that's how I would look at it. As I think if it's written in third person, maybe it's a bit easier to translate that into theatre, because it's almost like the audience is the narrator.
You know what, I think it'd be easier to translate transform poems into plays. I think that's happened as well.
Oh, okay.
For coloured girls who are something, I mean, the rainbows. For coloured girls who are struggling when the rainbow is not enough, or something along those lines. I can't remember the full title, but for coloured girls, obviously that got made into a film, but it was a play after the poem. It was like a long narrative poem.
Yeah.
Then it got made into a play. And
I had no idea. I wonder if they've made the Iliad or like Odysseus play.
Yeah.
Because that would work, because it's all oral.
We watched that once.
Oh, at the opera. It was made into the opera.
The Odyssey.
Yeah,
I think poems are easier to be made into plays.
And what do you think? What medium is, in your opinion? I think Lena Waith Sidepart says, do you get to see a lot of theatre?
Yeah, actually, quite a lot last year. I think there was so much. So I saw Misty, which was brilliant.
Misty,
I
loved Misty. Great.
Nine Night, which was
I saw that recently.
Outstanding.
Nine Night's great.
Amazing. I cried.
I cried so much.
Yeah, I had no idea. I was like,
what? Nine Night? Nine Night is so Jamaican. It's such a Jamaican play.
I want to take all my aunties and my mum to see it.
Yeah,
I know
take my
nine.
Yeah, I remember crying at the end, and I was like, well, this is not what I expected.
Yeah.
So yeah, okay, so we're all quite a good theatre-goers, I guess. And what are the strengths and pitfalls of a story being told in each of the mediums?
again, it's like what kind of what you said, like when a book is adapted into a film, you miss the inner workings of the character's brain. Sometimes though,
that closeness goes
like I was kind of thinking about it with Oh My Gods, and some things that she was thinking, she would have to, if it was a TV show or a film, she would have to declare.
Like have a voiceover.
You know what I mean? Have a voiceover, or she'd have to declare it into the conversation.
I do see
to make it clear of what she's thinking. You know what I mean? So I felt like that was something.
The diary, the letters would make a good voiceovers.
Yeah.
Like in the beginning of each episode, maybe we get like a letter.
Yeah, and they help.
I see it. It writes itself.
Exactly. I see it. It's happening. It's great.
So they help, but like those are the. I don't know whether I would call them pitfalls, but I would call like you have to. It's the adaptations. Yeah. So they have to be adapted into
suitable way.
We have a lot of shows. Like obviously, like Umbrella Academy was a comic. You know, when they're adapted into TV, it does help with the visuals with regards to it being a comic. But then obviously you develop it as the writing. So. Yeah, I don't know whether I wouldn't say there are pitfalls. I would just say that everything gets adapted.
All I know is that the fifth Harry Potter film was rubbish in comparison to the book, because the book it was like a third of the book that went missing, and I was a bit like, "What's going on?"
That was annoying. That should have been in two parts.
That should have been in two parts.
It's the longest book with the most content needed to be shared, or else.
You guys are still mad.
I'm literally
I went to watch it. I was so disappointed.
Honestly, Dumbledore's army was formed, and it was much bigger than they.
Dress.
All right, well, thank you so much, Rowling.
Oh, talking about Daniel Radcliffe, actually, he's in a new show. Have you seen the trailer? It's called Miracle Works. No. Miracle Workers or something.
Doesn't he still look like Harry Potter?
Yeah,
like as in,
he looks like him.
I know,
but like, and then he looks the same.
He still looks like when you look at the first Harry Potter and you look at the last one and you look at him now.
He looks like Daniel Radcliffe growing up.
You still look like
The
wind will blow and we'll see your mark.
I see.
Still look like a kid. Yeah. When I watched him in The Woman in Black.
You watched that?
Yeah, I watched that. I was so freaked out.
I saw it in the theatre. Yeah. It was incredible. Really? It was so scary.
I was literally like, wait, like you.
I don't do well in this situation. I don't do well.
You're Harry Potter. What are you doing? Yeah. Go back to Hogwarts. But yeah, so thank you so much for your cultural questions. Looking forward to the next week ones. Please make sure that you write in email at mostlylit@gmail.com, DM us on Twitter at mostlylit, find us on Instagram at mostlylitpod,
etc. I want to say thank you so much for Alex for coming.
I know, thank you so much for writing this incredible book.
Thank you
book.
For having me.
Where can they find you?
Twitter,
Alex Shepherd, that's probably the best place.
Make sure guys you grab Oh My Gods, it's out basically everywhere. Give it to your kids, your aunts,
your godkids, your
them
grandkids,
them there, your grandkids, your friends.
Basically anyone over the age of 11.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And make sure, you know, you find the God in you.
Yeah.
Shout out my like Athena still. Greatest God that ever lives. Athena was born out of Zeus's headache.
Yes.
And she's there to stress man. She was born from stressing man.
Oh,
and
wow.
I feel like that is just perfect. Like, she was born out of the stress of men.
You know when you say,
and it makes me very happy to know that.
You know when you say that she could use her powers to win the cases, but what are her powers again?
Strategy, war, wisdom, mathematics, arts and crafts, justice, civilization. She's the goddess of endeavor and stuff.
And she's good as well, which is why she's not good in the story that much, because you can't have anyone too good around.
Cool. Well, guys, remember that we are on Acast, so make sure you download and share that. Go into the app and subscribe in there as well. Yes. But we're on everywhere that you can find a podcast, I suppose. Yeah. 21st of February, it's just not about the Burka launch. Ray is sharing out details for that. And yes, I will be at Four Yours in March. I will share the details out closer to the time. What else is there? Oh, yeah. Twitter, Instagram, email address, email us, and write review and share alike. And as I said at the beginning, tell your family.
Tell your friends.
Tell everybody with ears. Yeah?
Bye, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. Alex, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having
fun. And wishing you all the great success. Looking forward to your next novel. And hope you're enjoying the whole process.
Thank you.
Do your thing.
Yeah. I'll see you guys next week.
Stay fly.
Bye. We'll be right back.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com, code program.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.